This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hide and seek. Perfect mix of music, news, and interviews. Joy 94.9.
You're with James Finlay and Avi Miller for your Thursday nights for Hide and Seek, and it is your program for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. Now, something that
wraps all of those together, I think, a bit.
Yeah, is a good old periodic survey. Because, you know, we do like to know what is going on within the community. We want to know what the trends are. We want to know what people are doing less.
We need to know
more of
what the community feels about wubbing. I mean, that needs to be a question on the 2014 survey.
We do need to include that in the 2014 survey for sure.
Joining us on the line from the University of New South Wales' Kirby Institute is the lead researcher, Dr. Martin Holt. Welcome to Hide and Seek.
Oh, good to be with you.
Have you planned to have a question on wubbing in the 2014 survey?
Well, we've already done the 2014 survey, but I am willing, given sufficient community consultation, to take to the questionnaire drafters for the 2015 survey. I'm not sure of your chances, but it's
ready to go. You know, we can get people to rate planking, twerking, and wubbing. As recreational activities,
I think. Wouldn't get very far with planking, I don't think.
No. Okay.
Now, there were some interesting findings in this latest survey, hasn't there, Mun?
Yes. It's kind of bread and butter findings. So we've been doing the survey for a long time, so things don't change enormously from one year to the next. But, you know, there are a few things in there that kind of stand out, which, you know, people working in education and HIV prevention are sort of wrestling with. But, yeah. Luckily, we don't tend to see massive dramatic change from one year to the next, which is good because that means we can keep up with the boys with what they're doing out in the community.
Yeah. Well, having said that, what are the biggest wrestle moments that have happened in the survey?
Well, I suppose that one of the things that that you know, the consumers of the survey, the people that sort of design programs, and they're kind of on top of that, but there's no easy solution to it, is that the massive shift towards using mobile phones to meet partners, which we've witnessed in the survey over the last 3 years. So
that's, you know, right. I think it was something like a 40% increase or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a very big. I mean, the number of men in Melbourne using mobile phones has doubled in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, right.
So we've really witnessed, you know, that becoming the dominant way that guys meet other guys in Melbourne. And, you know, so we've seen this before, like 10 to 15 years ago, we saw this with the uptake of the internet and the effect that had on other ways that guys met each other. And now we're seeing it again with mobile phones. And that, of course, you know, it's good that we're witnessing it, but of course how people respond to that in terms of encouraging people to have fun but stay safe is, of course, difficult, because the days of being able to go to a gay bar and find your target audience have kind of changed.
Yeah, and I think because we've seen now unprotected anal sex at a highest level ever recorded in Melbourne, and we've seen a huge increase in mobile apps as well. How far-fetched is it to link those?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure about that, because we had a similar kind of story around the internet made me do it when we had previous changes before in the rate of sex without condoms. And look, you know, we know what we actually tend to see is sort of the other way around. It's like the men who have the most sex go where other guys go, and at the moment that's on mobile phones. So it's not that, it's kind of, because when you sort of think it through, you think, well, how would a mobile phone make me have sex without condoms more. It doesn't sort of, the technology yeah. argument doesn't.
Is it? But could it not be an extrapolation? And I'm reaching here. Clearly, I'm not a researcher. But is it not an extrapolation of sort of the instant gratification, lack of ramification idea? You know, it's so easy to find someone that it becomes almost like a consumer. It's a. I'm trying to think of a smart way of saying wham bam thank you man.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose for those of us who've experimented with these applications, you've got to think about the reality. While it might help you find someone quickly and expedite finding someone, particularly in places where you wouldn't normally expect to be able to find other gay and bisexual men, and that of course is the great attraction of them because you can sort of use them out and about where otherwise you might not be able to find a potential partner. Often the actual reality, much like the internet, is it requires quite a bit of negotiation, you know, and organisation, and both of you getting to the same place. And it's often a bit like with the internet, it's often quite time consuming to arrange a meet. So in some ways there is I'm not saying that it's consistent, but there's actually quite a lot of opportunity for people to try and work out what they actually want.
Yeah.
From the meeting, whereas if you meet someone in a bar and you're into them and you decide to go home together, you perhaps have not discussed any of this prior, whereas there is the potential with the technology, and I'm not saying it's consistent because what we also see is that, of course, that, you know, these kind of negotiations can be kind of rich with assumptions about the partner, which can lead people into situations they perhaps weren't anticipating. But I kind of think that I'm taking a more neutral position on the technology. Sure, it means that people can advertise for, like the internet, they can advertise for all kinds of sex that they want. But I also think there is a potential there for men to use this in a way to say, this is exactly what I'm looking for and the partners I'm looking for. Now, the question I do have is whether the mobile apps mean that people are actually sharing less with each other than they were, because it's, you know, relatively small screen, depending on one's obsession with screen size.
Size queens.
Tablet. And most of the popular apps don't have very much information on it, so the onus is on you to discuss things in chat about what you're in for.
But we've seen an interesting development in the way that apps kind of talk about, HIV status, for example, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Well, look, and it very much depends on the platform. So I think we saw this with internet's initial chat sites that were popular, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Like, so I say Gaydar, which was one of the most popular ones in Australia initially, didn't have such a heavy emphasis on HIV status. But then when other ones came in, like competitors like Manhunt, and we saw kind of big uptake of those, they had much more of an emphasis coming from a North American market on HIV status disclosure. And I think we've seen a big rise over time in the number of men who say that they disclose their status to at least some of their partners, particularly among negative men, you know, so it's much more common among positive men, but much less common among negative men. And that's really changed over time. And I think that's been driven first by the internet. Now, mobile phones, I think there is a bit of a thing here where, as I was saying, some of the apps don't really ask you to, you know, you can put in absolutely minimal information and just a photo and, you know, whatever username you decide to use, and you can put nothing in the username if you want. I think there's an interesting trend now. I think follow-ups to, you know, Grindr, which was obviously the big breakout, geolocation app for gay and bisexual men, and was the first one that really sort of took off in Australia. The ones that have followed since, some of them have kind of refined some of that, some of that information about you or your partners, which may help in negotiating a sort of a safer encounter. And so I know, for example, Hornet has a, which is kind of not so popular at the moment, but markets itself as the app that Grindr should have been. has a very strong focus on HIV status disclosure and testing. Now, I'm not saying that that's without problems. I think, you know, you also get into problematic territory where you demand that people tell each other their status. I think that's kind of not really the kind of way we necessarily want to go. But certainly supporting people to know their status through regular testing and then discussing that with partners, particularly if you're thinking about, you know, embarking on a relationship or having sex without condoms specifically, is obviously, you know, a useful harm reduction measure.
We are talking to Dr. Martin Holt from the Kirby Institute from the University of New South Wales in Sydney. Now, Martin, one of the interesting things that came out of the study that I noticed is an increase in monogamy.
Yes, that old chestnut's back on the
internet. Yeah, let's unpack that for a second. So we have it. We obviously have an increase in people using hookup apps, but at the same time, we have an increase in committed relationships, creating rules about no sex outside the relationship.
Yeah. And it's one of those interesting things where, you know, we're obviously quite... In the survey, we're quite focused on what men do with casual partners, because we obviously are concerned that if men are having sex with people they don't know that well, that can lead to situations where, you know, the risk of HIV is increased. However, you know what you do with your regular partner, your boyfriend or your long-term partner, your husband, is obviously important as well. And we've known for a long time that gay men are actually, you know, sort of equally comfortable in regular sort of partnerships to either be in a monogamous relationship or in be a non-exclusive one. Often there's more focus on non-exclusive relationships because those men, you know, have sex in and out of the relationship. But yeah, we do see a bit of a trend in some jurisdictions, and Melbourne seems to have popped up there, with a bit of a rise in the number of men who are saying they're in exclusive partnerships.
I wonder, do you think that's almost a reaction to, I suppose, the ongoing quest for marriage equality? There seems to be more of a feeling of responsibility to at least appear to be in these committed monogamous relationships as presenting rationale for things like marriage equality.
Possibly. I mean, I'm not sure. Exactly why we see these things, they kind of ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. We see some variation around the country as well, just depending on the size of the city. You know, Sydney, you tend to see more open relationships. You know, Melbourne, slightly fewer. Canberra, I've often joked, is the home of monogamy in Australia.
Well, there's no one to pick from, so just stick with what you got.
Once you get somebody, you hold on to them pretty tight, which they love me making that joke. I hope nobody from Canberra's listening. And, you know, Melbourne, we see a bit of a rise. I think overall, we still see the same. The thing to remember is, and I think that's absolutely fine, you know, what we kind of encourage when we look at these things is what I pay most attention to is, rather than the specific agreement that people have, you know, whether it's, you know, you allow sex outside the relationship or not, because these, of course, are valid choices, is whether you have had an explicit discussion with your partner about it. And the thing that's concerned me most over the last 10 to 15 years is we've seen a real, in some states and territories, we've seen a real fall in men, you know, around half of men in relationships often have not, have not actually negotiated an agreement with their partner. So they've felt too awkward, or it's been too difficult, or it just hasn't occurred to them to actually have a discussion about what's acceptable. And so Melbourne's slightly better on that respect, but we still got around, you know, 4 out of 10, just under half of men in relationships have had no explicit discussion with their partner about casual sex. And so maybe it's assumed that, yes, we're not going to do that, but we can also see from the kinds of agreements that men have that there are plenty of men who do have casual sex out of their relationship, but perhaps they haven't had a discussion with their partner about that. And that is the kind of thing where I think, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement there. And it is awkward for people, but I just sort of encourage people, particularly if you're in, you know, in a phase where you're being serially monogamous, perhaps, you know, you're having a number of short-term relationships one after the other, setting some ground rules at the beginning about what you are prepared to do and whether you both know each other's HIV status and how good that knowledge is, you know, how recently you've tested, is kind of a pretty good first step. So it's certainly at the beginning of the relationship and perhaps at the unfortunate end of the relationship as well before you embark on another one. But yes, I'm always quite surprised to see, because gay men have generally been a bit better at setting some ground rules about what is acceptable or not, at just how many men are saying they're in a ongoing relationship but they've had no discussion with their partner about what's allowed and what's not allowed.
Mm. Martin, before we let you go, what is the most what's the best thing to, I mean, in your opinion, what is the most
heartfelt, warming?
Yeah. What do you know?
What are you happy about?
Yeah.
What can you give MSM down in Melbourne a pat on the back for?
So the pat on the back is that there's a pretty high rate of HIV testing. So with me complaining about people not testing enough, that actually Melbourne has sustained a very high level of HIV testing in the community for a long time, and I'd just say keep it up. You know, there are more options available now in, you know, Melbourne than before. You know, different ways to get tested.
We should give a quick shout out to the Pronto Clinic in Collingwood.
Come and have a look at it when I'm down for the International AIDS Conference the week after next. And
wonderful.
You know, that kind of incentive just on its own, if you are able to get there, fantastic. But also just the general focus on, you know, whether you're comfortable going to your GP or a sexual health centre. You know, quite a high proportion of men in Melbourne report that they test annually. There's a lot of focus now on, particularly if you have quite a lot of partners, if you're sexually active with casual partners, to test more frequently. You know, and I think we want to get that message out there that it is easier to get tested than before, and we'd encourage you to do it, you know, particularly if you're playing the field and having a lot of fun, to do it two or three times a year, and to speak to your doctor or, you know, to a community educator about what would work for you and where you could go. And there are, getting that message out, there are more options out there. We'll keep you safe and we'll keep your partners safe. And I think Melbourne is starting from a really stable baseline there, and it's good. You know, like men in Melbourne have sustained a really good level of testing for quite a long time. However, to make a real difference to the HIV epidemic, we need to get that up. So, you know, that is one of the areas where I think it's positive, but there's room for improvement. The thing that's really impressive among positive men in Melbourne is that, you know, there's been ongoing increases in the proportion of positive men on treatment, and we know that's good for their health, and it's, it also helps them protect their partners from the risk of transmission. And, you know, that is welcome, because I think, you know, Melbourne is one of those places where, you know, perhaps quite rightly, with previous treatment combinations, there was sort of fear of treatment, and that's perfectly understandable, given that, you know, it's a long-term commitment once you start treatment. But the treatment combinations now are just so much more tolerable and easy to incorporate into your life, and we can see that in the survey results from the positive men, that, you know, with nearly 9 out of 10 now are taking treatment. And
and I think we can definitely thank Hide and Seek for that.
Yeah, we can take some credit. That's right.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.